If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Been listening to Medication from Leslie Mendelssohn's forthcoming record, If You Can't Say Anything Nice, due out April 17th. We're big fans of Leslie Mendelssohn. She is a multi-instrumentalist, singer-songwriter who is quite talented and varied in her presence in various scenes, both in and out of the jam band community. She's played with Bob Weir at TRI Studios, worked on a project or two with Steve Kimmock, and has opened for The Who in New York City at Madison Square Garden. Her debut release was nominated for a Grammy, and her follow-up, Love and Murder, remains one of our favorite albums since we started this podcast. Now she is set to release If You Can't Say Anything Nice, which delves a little deeper into the human condition, and more specifically hers, and offers up a fairly eclectic view of her as an artist. So of course we had to get Leslie on to talk about the new record, because we dig it quite a bit. Our conversation started when I suggested that this latest record is a bit more produced than her sophomore one, and I wonder what made her decide to add more to the sonic landscape this go around.
Well, I thought it would be a good next step sonically in keeping with the theme, because there is still a lot of acoustic elements on the record, but the new songs required the production that they got. It just, and it still is pretty stripped down in terms of, let's even say my first record, or, you know, just other records that there isn't a ton of production on it. We have drums and bass, piano and guitar, and that's kind of it. I put a little organ on some things, maybe a harmonica here and there, but that's kind of it. It's still pretty stripped down, but yes, it is a definite step in the production direction, if you say that.
Yeah, and you know, it feels to me that it's in many ways a blues record. Even songs like Would You Give Up Your Gun or I Need Something to Care About, though sonically not blues, are blues songs. I mean, they are of a wanting and a desire to change people's thoughts or opinions while you emote on a certain subject. I mean, it's obvious that there are other songs that are very bluesy on the record, but I mean, this is a very cathartic record. And when I think of blues, that's what I think about. I think about songs that are very cathartic, about laying it all out there. And
right, when you have nothing else to turn to, that's the outlet.
Right.
I never thought about it like that. And first, before you started to explain, I was thinking about the changes. It was like, oh, you know, like a 1-4-5, because now that I'm thinking about I Need Something to Care About, it's without the, you know, without the bluesy melody quite, but it's still in that form a little bit. I never thought about that.
Well, that's what I'm here for, whether it's obvious or not.
Thank God for you.
Yeah, exactly. But the songs are so very cathartic. I think more cathartic than anything you've done to this point. Whether it's the love song that opens the record, Lay It All on Me, or Medication, or any of the other songs. It's an extremely cathartic record. After you made Love and Murder, was this the road you intended to go down? Or is it just, again, life happening and thus this is what became of it?
Yeah, I didn't know what record to make next after I did Love and Murder and it came out. I was thinking, I definitely wanted to do, to return a little bit more to piano and singing and playing piano, because I feel like I did. Love and Murder had more of an acoustic guitar slant to it, even though there was a few piano songs like Coney Island and Crazy. But, you know, like I'd say for the most part, it was very acoustic. I wanted, because that's something I feel like I can do. And I wanted to get back to that thing. And then just, you know, whatever happened over the year or two and discussions that I had with my co-writer and about subjects we wanted to sing about, that kind of just started to develop and it became what it became.
Steve McEwen is the co-writer for most of these songs?
He certainly is, absolutely.
And he continues to co-produce, he co-produced this album as well?
Yeah. We started writing in the studio of a friend I met, Lorenzo Wolf. I met him at a Teddy Thompson show. I think it was at City Winery. We just started talking and he was mentioning that he had a studio in Brooklyn, and I wasn't even thinking about recording at that time yet, because I just wanted to write. I was just thinking, and I asked him, I said, do you have a room that I could rent to write in? He's like, oh, you could just come down. And wound up working there maybe like 2 or 3 weeks, and all of a sudden we had this collection of songs. We're like, let's just record here. This is great. The piano, the magic, it all happened. Lorenzo's great. And then, you know, they figured that, you know, Steve was gonna, it just kind of naturally happened where, you know, because Lorenzo was the engineer, but he's also a bass player. And it just kind of happened where they wound up producing or co-producing. And I mean, I definitely had my say in there too. I just didn't take any credit. I always have something to say, but it's good because Steve's great, because I can, it just gets done. You know, that like he's good at decision-making, where sometimes I can get hung up on things, you know, and they were both good at being like, let's do it. Let's move on. We actually, it took like a week or two to record the whole.
Wow. That's impressive.
It didn't take long. It didn't take long at all.
That's impressive because, I mean, it's a collection of, what is it, 12 songs?
10.
10. But I mean, that's impressive to put down 10 songs in that short amount of time. Mental health is a significant theme of this record as well. Did it help you to write some of this stuff down, whether in song, melody, lyrics, to deal with your own mental health? Did it help to write some of this stuff down and to think about this stuff sort of on paper and outside of your head a little bit?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. 'Cause sometimes all these feelings, they just kind of stay in you until you put them down on paper and talk about them and sing. That subject matter is never easy. Sometimes you feel like an alien, or am I the only one who feels this way? And I feel like once we made the songs, it just all of a sudden became a little bit, okay, this is what it is. Here it is. It's right here. And I can identify it a little bit better, being that it was made into something.
Right. Well, you know, in I Need Something to Care About, there's this line, I can't feel for anything, thinking that my mind's desensitized. That is because you're in your head, right? I mean, that's...
Absolutely. And it's just, it's numbing sometimes. And I can't feel a thing for anything. Right. I think that, yeah, where you just become so inundated with your own thoughts that you become numb and somewhat helpless. But that's the whole point of the song, is that the want is still there.
Right.
Just don't always know how to get there.
Right, because you're so consumed by your own situation that you
own thoughts, my own depression, my own paralysis, also the news, the 24-hour cycle of news doesn't help. And I'm not even talking about today. Just talking about in general, but I feel like it's very applicable to what's happening today, because there's days where it's like, I don't even know, do I even have a point of getting out of bed? And I know I'm not the only one who feels this way right now. I've been talking to a lot of people, and there's people, sure, that still have their day jobs, even though they're working at home. But for a lot of artists and people that it's where it's a little bit more vague, it's really hard, and you have to find your purpose during the day. And I feel like, yeah, this song makes a little more sense, even more sense for me right now.
Right. I mean, it's just what we've done is that those feelings, that anxiety or mental pressure, or however you want to describe it, is just on steroids at this point. I mean,
different. So what the hell are we doing?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the point? What are we doing? What's the point? When's it going to end? What's our timeline? What are our goals? You know, all these things are going through our head right now, and you're like, okay. It's like you don't want to pretend and go through the motions, but there is, you know, you have to find, I feel like for myself, you know, like I struggle, but I do have to find a purpose.
And that purpose is making music, right? And entertaining people and letting your thoughts help people with what they're going through. That's
my job.
Right.
That is my job. And you actually, even more than anything, is, you know, like I feel like over the years, as important it is to make good music and make a good record that I'm proud of and that people enjoy, entertaining people, I feel like, is even more of a job that I want to be as great at it as I can be, because, you know, that is my job. I want to be able to let people, you know, like help people just escape their brain for a second and have a good time and let go and like, don't worry, I got this, you know,
right.
Or let's do this together. And more so now again than ever, because, like the other night I did my first live stream.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty nervous about it. This whole pandemic has really put my back up against the wall of becoming a little bit better at social media, because I've never really liked it. I've always been one to just like go out and, you know, be with people and, mm-hmm. you know, perform for people, but this is obviously not possible right now. So I think it's definitely a new form that if you still want to be in the business, you got to embrace it. So, you know, I did my first one last weekend and it went better than I could have imagined. It was emotional. Mm-hmm. I feel like seeing people's names there, knowing that people were watching and that we were having this dialogue, and there was, you know, a good amount of people watching it at one point, and I just felt this surge of just this love and community, and it totally lifted my spirits, and you know, from the feedback I got from people, it lifted theirs too. And I think for that hour, that's what we were doing, and I felt like, you know, I did my job, I entertained people, and it's just, I think, the most important thing I could do today.
So when's the next one?
I don't know. I have to think about it. I was just like, because I did it on Instagram, and all my fans that don't use Instagram, and I'm just, you know, like some of my family members and right. People that just haven't gone on that path. So I just, to be fair, I'm probably gonna have to do a Facebook one.
Oh no, not the dreaded Facebook
list. So they ordered, they like downloaded Instagram and got into it, right. You know, like they watched it, but you know, I'll probably do a Facebook one next, or there's, but I love the last platform because it was Rockwood Music Hall's Instagram live feed that I tapped into.
Oh, great.
And and it was great because half the proceeds went to the artist, but and the rest went to the staff.
Right.
So it was like, you know, people were also like, you know, we're helping the community because those clubs are struggling right now. So I was happy to be a part of something that was just larger than myself. So I'm looking for the next platform because I could do my own, and, you know, making money or not, whatever, you know, it's yeah. tough. People can donate, great. If they can't, it's fine. We're all in the same boat, you know? I don't know. We're looking for the next big thing.
The title of the album, I mean, we jumped right in, which is fine. The title of the album is If You Can't Say Anything Nice. And I have to tell you that of all of the lessons that my mother has taught me, and I'm almost 45, that stands out as one of the, like, I can hear her say it to me. Like, I can hear her, like, when I'm 5 years old saying it to me, and when I'm 10 saying it to me, and even recently saying it to me. It's such a universal theme, and yet we don't do very good. We don't do very well with it because we don't often think about if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. I mean, so it's interesting that that's a cornerstone to this record. What was the thinking behind using that phrase and writing a song around that very noble idea?
Well, it has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I mean, there's kind of two sides to it. There's the one side that's very literal, like, you know, that we do have a knee-jerk reaction to just kind of go for the jugular. And even if it's only for humor's sake or whatever, bigging yourself up, you know, there is that. We tend to talk shit. And I'm no better than the next person. So it's just kind of a little bit of a check. But there's also the other slant to it where it's a bit ironic, or it's being a little sarcastic of like, of course you need to speak your mind and against the establishment, and like, you know, fuck those people, and you know, like, you have to speak your mind. So there's it's a little two-sided,
but it doesn't come from necessarily people saying or talking shit about you, right? I mean, that's not,
no, I don't care about that.
Right.
No, it's more about my own reflection of how I knee-jerk reaction to go to the negative about something before I even, you know, like just talking shit in general. but the other thing is also, I was going to say, I just forgot. Never mind. Go ahead.
You did mention, and I thank you for it, that there are tracks where it's just you and the piano. Would you give up your gun, or I need something to care about? that's just you in the rawest form. Is piano more comfortable for you than acoustic guitar at this point? I mean, I know that you flip-flop back and forth, but is piano ultimately your instrument?
Yeah, I mean, I'm better at it. I think I play it better. I have more of a language as far as chords. It's guitar, I have tiny hands and I struggle. So right. If I could play something simple, I love playing guitar, but you know, like it is definitely more natural for me to play piano. And that's why I wanted to do that too. I wanted just to get back to that. Oh, here's a piano song. Like sometimes I think about like just sitting down and just playing songs. Like, you know, a lot of my inspirations are always, I always go back to like Randy Newman.
Right.
And you know, there's something about the way that he just sits down and he has it's just so about the piano and the lyrics and the vocal. I just love him so much. And it's not even like totally inspired the album. Like he's just an inspiration for me always.
The thing about Randy, and I don't know if it's too dissimilar from yourself, is that, well, maybe I'll ask you, are you more songwriter than singer? I mean, when people think of Randy, they think of him as songwriter. Brilliant songwriter.
That's true. No, I think of myself, I'm a better artist and singer, I think, and interpreter, you know, of songs. It's like, you know, and that's a, but yeah, songwriting's there. I mean, but I feel like I can sing somebody else's song as well as I could sing one of mine. Like I love interpreting song. I just want to sing a good song.
Right. Well, you mentioned Randy Newman, and there's obviously a Nick Cage thing going on at some point. Who are some of the other, Jackson Browne is obviously an influence and somebody that you've collaborated with. Are there other musicians that, you know, Leslie's at home all day today. What is she going to play?
This album is really inspired, particularly by John Lennon.
Yep.
Plastic Ono Band.
Yes.
A lot of the template for this record was based on listening to his record and feeling inspired by it. And that's kind of what set the tone for the songs. So, you know, we were listening to his record. I was like, this is so timely. Just the way he plays piano and sings and the message he's singing about. And then he'll go to a guitar song, whether it's solo or, you know, like it's just the all these different kind of colors, but within the very few instruments that he's chosen. So he's either on guitar or piano. And then right. He's got drums, bass, guitar, you know. And it's just, it's simple. And his message, I mean, I've always been, I mean, you know, everybody's a Beatles fan, but you know, like, you know, particular, I mean, I love all of them individually as well. Mm-hmm. And John Lennon is just, his message is so, it just cuts like a knife. There's no messing about, you know, exactly what he's saying. He doesn't mince words. And I have so much respect for that kind of writing and artistry. And he's so brave. And I just wanted to make a record like his.
Right.
He's just like such an inspiration. That was like more than any other artist for this record. I'd have to say it was him.
Well, if you're going to aspire, you might as well, you know,
be the best.
Yeah. He's be the best. Don't fool around. Right.
He's a Beatle. I mean, he's John Lennon, you know,
right.
You don't get much better than him. I have like a top five, then I have a top 10, and then I have a top 20, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like there's just the greats, you know, and he's in the top five for sure.
I don't think we ever talked about it, but speaking of top 10s or fives or whatever, you open for The Who. I mean, in
oh, that band.
Oh, them, you know. Those guys.
Ooh, well, no. Sorry.
At least two of the four of them. What was that like? Just to switch gears for a second.
Every feeling you could ever imagine feeling at one time.
Right.
It was overload. I mean, here's the thing. Like I've already been touring. I toured with Roger a bunch the Raj. Like, look at me, I'm on a one name basis now. Me and Raj go way back. Roger invited me, Roger Daltrey invited me to tour with him when he did his solo tour without, so it's basically the Who band without Pete.
Right.
And he was touring around, he did a few tours on the West Coast and a couple of things here and there in Vegas and on the East Coast, and invited me because it just kind of, I was, first of all, it was an amazing experience. It worked really well. I mean, there were such great shows, theaters, and the crew was amazing. They treated me like family. And those were great experiences. And then I didn't expect to get the call to open up for them, for the Who at Madison Square Garden. I was just like, you know, when they asked me, I'm on the phone, I'm like, really? And I'm like, are you sure? I don't, I even questioned it. I'm like, what? I'm like, they have all these rock and roll bands, these like men rock and rollers, you know? And mm-hmm. and then I'm like, okay. I'm like, that's interesting. But I'm all right. I'm doing it. You know, I said, yes, of course I said, yes.
Yes.
It's been a dream to ever, you know, I did the national anthem a couple of years ago and that was amazing, but you know, this is a whole other thing too. Mm-hmm. And so we did it, Steve McEwen, and mm-hmm. I was just on guitar and he was on electric guitar, and we come out and I just couldn't believe, like, just like I said, every feeling imaginable all at the same time. And so it was kind of like, whoa. And then it was over and it was like, I was on a high for sure. And then, you know, I didn't expect to get asked again. So I got asked to do it again for September. And they were so sweet about it. Robert Rosenberg, who's manager, and I worked with him in London. So that's the connection there.
Right.
But and that's a whole other story. But just to mm-hmm. be quick about it, you know, when he asked me to do it, they were saying that, you know, they wanted a New York act and that the crew already loved me and Roger, you know, was into it. So that was just so nice. And then the second time we did it was even, I was a little bit more calm. So, you know, I feel like I got the first one out and I brought my Wurlitzer this time. So I had keys and I got to split it up. And for some reason, the sound was really full that wow. night. Not that the first night wasn't good. It was just this one. I don't know if the audience was a little quieter. It was just as, you know, packed. It was, you know, like maybe like half to 75% by the end of the set, you know, so we had a nice amount of people in there, and I don't know, it was just darker, the lighting was intimate, and all of a sudden I'm like, when I could hear myself, it doesn't matter where I am. And so like the fact that I was getting sound back, like I'd be in a theater or in a venue that was a little even smaller and intimate, it felt all of a sudden, it didn't feel so harrowing. It didn't feel like I was in this big giant space, and I kind of caught my breath this time and relaxed into it. It was, I dare I say, enjoyable.
Wow. I mean, it must be for somebody who grew up in the area to play that room.
Long Island.
Not too far away. Must be overwhelming. And then to know that you're opening for the Who, I mean, I know that you and Raj go way back, but still.
No, of course. I mean, they're one of the greatest bands. We, like you said, I guess this is what ushered it in. You have the Beatles, you have the Rolling Stones, and then you got the Who. They're, right. I mean, for, you know, and I have a good lot of English bands. I put in like Queen, and you know, like mm-hmm. there's a, you know. They're one of the greats, and their songs, it's just such a powerful show. They're just wonderful, and they've been wonderful. And I had three more actually coming up, and they haven't been announced, but since it's been canceled, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, at the end of April, they invited me to do three more out west. So that was exciting. That was exciting. They're probably going to happen again. I don't know.
Are you friendly with Katie Jacoby? Because I know that
yeah.
she... Yeah, so there's at least sisters can hang out a little bit too, right? I mean, that's good.
Yeah, well, yes and no. Like, it's kind of such a, it's not like a hang. It's
work.
She's working. I was working. You know, by the time I'm done, she's on stage.
Right.
So, but I got to see her afterwards. And whenever I see her around town, it's always like that kinship I think we can definitely share.
The other artist, you know, we mentioned Jackson Browne and we mentioned Pete, and the other artist, you know, there's been this long space, I don't know, has it been 2 years since Love and Murder? But there's been this long space of time where you also have collaborated with Steve Kimmock. Another giant who I don't think gets recognized, well, certainly doesn't get recognized in the same vein as Pal Raj or even Jackson Browne, but is a creative genius on his own.
He is a genius.
Yeah. So talk a bit about Steve and why he doesn't necessarily get recognized in that genius kind of way. I mean, we know he's a genius, and lots of people that listen to this podcast know he's a genius, but what is it about Steve Kimmock that makes him a genius, and why isn't he recognized as such in the greater music community?
Maybe because of it's, I don't want to say instrumental, because I know that that's not the case, but he does a specific thing, and right. For people to appreciate his thing, get it, and know how brilliant he is. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just the world is weird.
You collaborated, you wrote songs with him. You also toured with him.
Yes.
Was that as exciting as doing solo stuff and working on your own projects as it was collaborating with Steve?
It was different and exciting. I love it. I loved working with him. I loved recording that record with him that Dave Schools produced. And it came at a time when I wasn't quite sure what I was doing, because I was living in London for a little while, and I had a couple failed attempts at records that came out. I mean, I made them, but they never saw the light of day, or right. You know, and those are other stories. But you know, like, I come back, and because I had done that We're Here with Bob Weir back in 2013, I think it was, right. I had established these wonderful friendships. I met Steve Kimmock, and I met Dave Schools that day. Jason Crosby's an actual old friend of mine from Long Island, and we always joke around when his hair was short and my hair was long.
You've switched places.
But now, yeah. Well, actually, after this pandemic, my hair is getting quite long. But anyway, I had, you know, Jay Lane, and that was, what a band, right?
Right.
And Bob was doing these things. I was invited to go, and it was just such... It was such a wonderful show, and I made these wonderful friendships. And then even I went back to London after, and I was still there. So about 2015, I come back and I call up Steve, just like, what are you doing? Because I was just not like sick of myself or whatever. I felt the urge to do something new. And little did I know that it was going to turn into this. He was in the Bay Area. I was spending a lot of time there, because I was also like, I don't know, I was kind of just made some friends on the West Coast and in the Bay Area, and I just like being over there at that time. So and my mom had just moved to Sonoma, which, you know, was a big move for her, because my sister lives in San Francisco. So right. And it was such a weird coincidence that she wound up living 15 minutes from the Kimmocks. So that was fate, you know, I stayed with my mom. I was working and writing with Kimmock, and it was just this wonderful time, and I got to just be there. And then we made the record and we toured with it, and I love that record. Yes. And I'm really proud of the time. And it was definitely challenging. I mean, it wasn't, as far as being an improvisationalist, I wouldn't really consider myself one, but I'm open to exploration. But you know, I don't have the chops that he and Bobby Vega had, so I always felt a little bit like uncomfortable. But I knew that when we did find our groove, it wasn't about me blowing chops, or even Steve for that matter. It's just the exploration of finding the openness in a song and different rhythms, and I really enjoy that kind of improv, and it opened me up, and I was definitely like so nervous to start, but like you do everything, like anything you do, if you keep doing it, you get better at it. And so, you know, I got more comfortable. I was finding my voice in it, I hope.
You hope. Well, I think you were great. Like I'm thinking of some of the songs, and
well, the record's one thing. That was easier than going out and improvising every night.
Right, right. You're not in that. You're not.
But it was actually cool because we actually recorded the record while we were touring. So we had some playing already under our belt, which was nice.
Now that he's moved east, I think he's moved east.
He is. He's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Is there a plan to start that engine up again? Or
I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we'll find a place. I mean, me and him, we're kindred spirits. We're, you know, I love him and we have a bond. And I know that if it's not now, it's just when. And, you know, when the timing's right. Because, yeah, it'll happen.
What's the plan with I Can't Say Anything Nice? I mean, is there a plan right now? I mean, everything is kind of up in the air. The plan is to release the record, obviously.
Yeah, and we're still releasing it. We're still going to do it.
And then hopefully a small tour eventually?
Eventually. You know, it's just hard to make a plan right now. But I think I didn't want to hold the record back. You know, I was talking to Kevin Calbro, Royal Potato Family. So, we were just thinking, well, are we going to hold the record back? And I feel like a lot of people are, so maybe it makes sense for them. It didn't make sense for us because it's just, I don't know. It just, and also the material feels timely. I don't want to not put it out there. Maybe people will want to listen to this stuff now. I feel like people still need art. They need music. They need books. They need art. And so I don't want to not do it for my own selfish reasons of like getting more people. I don't know. Maybe more people listen to it now because nobody's doing anything. I don't know. I don't have an answer other than a gut feeling of like, I'm not going to stop and delay it. I want to do it. I believe in it. I want to get it out there. I want to be able to do more live stuff online so we can keep that ball rolling. I think that's a really great avenue right now. I'm really grateful for it now.
Plus you don't have to shake anybody's hand if you do it live.
God, I'm so excited about that.
I can tell.
I feel like Howard Stern. Are you a Stern fan?
Of course.
Well, ta-ta, 2 feet to you. You know, as far as like, you know, like he's thrilled about it.
Yeah.
An agoraphobia.
Well, it's funny. Fan. There's also Larry, I have a, you know, it's a kinship too with Larry David. And I just saw,
he's right in there.
Yeah. I just saw online this thing about, you know, stay in your home. It's good to stay in your home. And like, exactly. Like, you know, we are kindred souls, all of us who just, this is what we do anyway. So
I'm not hating it. I mean, I'm scared to death for the, you know, the people getting sick and that are not being able to resolve. And I listen to Cuomo every day and I love Cuomo so much and his brother, Chris Cuomo. That's like the highlight of my day watching CNN and watching those two go back and forth and spar. I think it's so delightful and wonderful. But yeah, Chris is sick. We're going to see. And I love that he's doing his show to show everybody this is what coronavirus looks like. And hopefully he can do it tonight. If he can't, you know, I don't know. Just wish him the best. I wish everybody the best. It's a scary time. I don't know. But, you know, for me, I'm healthy. I'm, you know, everybody in my family so far so good. And so, you know, most people who do have it seem to be resolving themselves. But yeah, it's scary out there. I don't know.
What isn't scary is the record. It is a great record. Thanks. I highly encourage people to listen to it. Thanks so much, Leslie, for making music.
Thank you.
And for taking the time to talk about it. I know some of these things are not easy to talk about, so I appreciate it. And continued success, whatever that looks like, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Leslie Mendelson is a fascinating and very forthcoming artist. She is talented beyond words and has a great deal to say with her music, but also, as you heard, just in conversation. For more on Leslie Mendelson, visit lesliemendelson.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off of If You Can't Say Anything Nice. Here is The Hardest Part.
To those who believe in the things they cannot see, may God provide you everything you need. Good or bad, right or wrong, and nothing in between. Where the end is there to justify the means. always trying to get back to the start. Letting go is a hardest part. To those who never dwell on their own mortality, hopeful even drifting out to sea. To those who forget what's now a distant memory, and the simple fact that history repeats, it repeats. Well, I wish I knew. Sang and how to the Lord she used to pray, and what makes her makes me who I am. If only she could help chase those demons away.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.